Welcome to Moco's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yasharoff, the Director of Content and Operations here at MyMC Media. We are coming to you from our plush podcast. Carolyn, would you agree? It's a plush podcast studio. Thank you for that agreement. We're here in Rockville, Maryland, in the heart of Montgomery County. And speaking of Montgomery County, today's special guest is Steve Sands, a man who needs no introduction. You know him from NBC and Golf Channel. I don't know if this is your dream job and you're going to tell us, Steve, but you are the envy of many, many golf fans who think it would be their dream job. So welcome to the show. How are you doing, buddy?
I appreciate that, Joe. I'm doing great, man. Always great to talk to you. Hope you're doing well as well.
Absolutely. So thank you for asking. So Steve grew up in Montgomery County. We're going to get to that. And you're just coming off the Bay Hill Tournament, the API, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, where Francesco Molinari won. And then you've got Sawgrass next week. This is a really busy stretch for you the past few weeks and the next few weeks. Are you getting your sleep?
Yeah, it's a good one. I sleep a little bit here and there. I'm an old man, Joe. I don't sleep very well anymore. most of the time, Tito's helps that.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, it's a great stretch, man. We really enjoyed it, NBC and Golf Channel. We pick things up from CBS on NBC after the West Coast. So we begin the WGC Mexico Championship, come to Florida for the four-week stretch. That includes the Players this week for the first time since 2006 back in March. And then we go to Austin, Texas and San Antonio, and then go to Augusta for the Augusta National Women's Amateur, the drive, chip, and putt. Those are the Saturday and Sunday before the Masters. And then I hop over and do work for the Golf Channel exclusively the week of the Masters and host the early coverage. And there all week. It's a fantastic stretch on the calendar, and we're always excited to do it.
And Steve, of course, is the lead interviewer. When you know it's a big event, you know it's a big golf event when Steve Sands is interviewing golfers. You're also studio host, play-by-play. You're good at all of them, Steve, not just saying that. Is there one role particularly that you like better than the others?
You know, people ask that all the time, Joe. I think the most fun for me anyway is being able to do all of the jobs. I was in the booth all 4 days at Bay Hill last week, and then took the headsets off, got out of the booth, and went down and did the interviews. Sometimes I'm in the tower, like this week in Sawgrass, be in the 17th tower for the first half of the show, then go down and interview the guys when they finish and come off the golf course after they sign their card. So, I mean, yeah, sure, who wouldn't want to be Dan Hicks, Jim Nantz, Pat Summerall, you know, Dick Enberg, Al Michaels. But I enjoy the variety of it, and it makes it a lot of fun.
Talking to Steve Sands on the phone from Orlando. You had, as you call, a home game last week covering the Bay Hill tournament, so you're able to sleep in your own bed and hang out with a family, and then heading to Sawgrass this week, where typically it's the best field. I'm guessing it's the best field also this year with the most top 100 players.
It is. It's the deepest field in golf. It's a great week. It's the signature event for the PGA Tour. I think a lot of people who love watching golf don't quite understand the dynamic with the way golf is run. It's kind of a goofy deal. It's not like the Super Bowl, which is owned by the NFL, or the NBA Finals, or the Stanley Cup Finals, or the World Series. In golf, Augusta National owns the Masters. The USGA owns the US Open. The RNA, the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews, owns the Open. The PGA of America owns the PGA Championship. The PGA Tour, which is the grandest stage of them all, has all the great players, is what everybody watches every single week. They don't own any of those four majors. So their signature event, the biggest event, the biggest purse, and the deepest field is the Players. It's played at the same place every year, which only the Masters enjoys compared to the other three majors. So that's why the Players is such an elevated event, such a great week. We're really looking forward to getting up there.
The so-called fifth major, but for the Players, it's more than that from what you're saying. Now, this year for the first time...
Go ahead. It really is. You know, people always say, Fred Couples won the 92 Masters and two Players. Mm-hmm. Davis Love the third won a PGA and a Players. Tiger Woods won 14 majors and two Players. It's never, you know, it's mutually exclusive to just major championships. You have the four majors, and then you have the Players, and then there are the rest of the events. So it's elevated to that stature through the guys who play in it and who have won on that golf course.
And one of the things that the average golf fan knows Sawgrass from is the 17th hole, the par 3 over water, the famous hole where lots of balls get dunked into the water. Some players love love it. Some players hate it. They think it's a little tricked up. Where do you stand, and where do you think most players feel about the 17th hole at Sawgrass?
I absolutely love it. It's in a great spot on the golf course, the 17th. When the guys play Thursday and Friday and they flip the nines and they tee off on number 10 and 17 is their eighth hole of the day,
right,
it just seems really goofy to me. So I think it's the most famous hole in the world. Do I think it's the best? No, but it is the most famous hole in the world. I also think that it's just great. And it provides drama. These guys get nervous. They have a wedge in their hands, Joe. I mean, you put a wedge in their hands anywhere in the world and there's grass around the green and they're going to stick that one. They're going to stick the landing every time. You put water all around the hole and make it 17 at Sawgrass with a Players' Championship on the line on Sunday. It makes everything different. And it's a fabulous hole. I love watching it. Love calling golf on that hole. And I think the great, great, great majority of the players think it's absolutely fantastic. It's made that championship famous. There's no question about it.
And I think, obviously, one of the reasons it's most famous and popular is that your average golfer, your 15, 18 handicapper, people like me, watch it sort of for the schadenfreude reasons of you're not necessarily hoping they hit in the water, but, you know, most average people, most average golfers will hit it in the water if they see water, and it's weird to see pro golfers. You would think they wouldn't hit the water, but they do a lot.
No, you love the carnage. Are you kidding me? It's part of the fun of the hole. You want to see how those guys react. That's why this weekend's going to be fascinating if the weather forecast holds up. For the first time since 06, like I said, that's 13 years ago, they're playing in March, which is when it's supposed to be played. The golf course was built for a March wind. The wind in March comes from the north. The wind in May, and much warmer in Florida, comes from the south. So the way the golf course was designed by Pete Dye is for a March wind, and this weekend it's supposed to be kind of low to mid 60s and some wind. And it's going to be fantastic to watch the best players in the world try to navigate and negotiate that hole more than any other hole on the golf course.
That's very interesting about the wind. You actually sound like our previous podcast guest last week, Doug Kammerer. So do you have a Doppler radar, Steve? Are you a weather guy too?
I think all of us who are sportscasters, my good friend Kevin Sheehan likes to point out, we're all amateur meteorologists. Especially those of us who work in an outdoor sport mostly. It's fantastic to watch the weather, but there's no chance in the world I would ever touch Doug's expertise. I enjoy every time I'm home visiting my mom and dad or my brothers and sisters, I enjoy watching Doug.
I know Kevin well. I worked with him at Channel 5 years ago, and he fancies himself a meteorologist, basically.
He's as good as anybody I know who does not do it for a living.
There you go. All right, so one of the things with the Sawgrass this year, you're talking about how it's made for March. This year, for the first time, they changed the schedule, so you have one big event every month. Sawgrass in March, Masters in April. In May, it's now the PGA. June is U.S. Open, and the last major now will be the Open, the British Open. What do you think of that? This has been in the works for a few years now, hasn't it?
It has. Big, big changes. A couple of things were at play there. One is the PGA Tour really wanted to get the players back in May, back in March. Mm-hmm. They really wanted to get it back in March. But they needed the PGA of America to agree to move the PGA Championship to May to fill the slot. And all of that was predicated on getting golf at the highest level away from professional football and a little bit of college football as well to maximize the sponsorship dollars, maximize the opportunity that golf has so it ends in August. And they needed all those pieces of the puzzle to come to play. And it did. So the PGA Championship now goes to May. And what that does is it booked 6 straight months of really good championship, high-level, massive events that stand on their own now. Mm-hmm. It also does something for the players that's fantastic. It moves it to the first big event. Ask any PGA Tour player the last few weeks. It's not as if they're gearing up solely for the Masters. They were gearing up for the players. And that's a really good thing for PGA Tour golf. That's a fantastic move. I also think when they moved to May, and I don't know if they'll admit this or not. I don't know. I have no idea. But when they moved to May, it was on Mother's Day weekend. As you know, Joe, and I do too, nobody cares about Father's Day. You can have it. You can do whatever you want on Father's Day. Mother's Day is a national holiday. It's sacred. You got to take mom out for brunch, and you you've got to spend the day with her, do what she wants to do. Difficult time just to get away, get up to Ponte Vedra Beach, go watch it in person, maybe watch all day long on television. It's not easy having it on Mother's Day weekend. So moving it away from Mother's Day weekend is also a very good thing as well.
Very interesting. All right, so we're definitely going to have to talk about Tiger. You can't talk golf, can't talk to Steve Sands without talking about Tiger. But before we do that, I want to talk about you growing up in Montgomery County. You went to Woodward High School, correct?
I did. Yes, sir.
Just a couple of years ago.
The proud Wildcat.
Yeah. So what was it like growing up in Montgomery County? What are your memories?
I loved it. You know, it's weird. My older brother and I, we lived on 31st Street, Northwest D.C. until junior high school. Mm-hmm. And my brother was starting high school and I was in junior high school. When my parents said that they were moving us out of the city and going to Montgomery County, we protested like you couldn't believe. My younger brother and sister, who are almost 4 years younger than me, they didn't know, they didn't care, it didn't matter to them. But for my older brother, David, and I, we were not happy at all. It ended up, obviously, my parents, that ended up being better for schools and for life and for the way we grew up. It was great. We loved it. You know, going to school at Woodward was fantastic. I still am in touch with a lot of good friends from there. Driving down to Redskins games at RFK with my family every Sunday when they were home, you know, going to the Capitol Center, just doing everything you could do as a normal D.C. sports family and kid. It was great. And my parents actually still live in the same house we grew up in Rockville. And much to our chagrin, we've been trying to get my dad to sell that thing for a while because they're getting up there in age. But they still have that house. And they enjoy living there.
And I know you come back, and when you do, you've been known to go to a Caps game or one of the other. You still love your D.C. sports teams, don't you?
There's no question. I was watching the Caps game last night, actually, with my wife and one of our sons. Caps with a good win over Winnipeg, 3-1. I watch as much Washington sports as I can. You know, it's a big passion of mine. We have a saying in our house that sports and family, and the rest is just details. I'm a big sports fan. As you know, I watch way, way, way too much sports, much to my family's chagrin. Between Maryland basketball, Caps hockey, the Nat, and the Skins, I'm having a hard time with the Wizards the last decade or so. We'll get to that in a second, by the way, for what they're doing right now. Just Steve Buckhams, a dear friend who does not deserve the treatment he is receiving right now. He's fabulous at what he does. He's a Washington sports icon, and shame on whoever's making that decision for making Steve kind of dangle out there. I hope the public outcry changes the mind of whoever made that decision. That's an outrage that you would change somebody like Steve Buckhams, as good as he is and as great a guy as he is. And I'm biased, and I know that, Joe. But Steve Buckhams is absolutely fabulous at what he does and deserves to stay as long as he wants as the TV voice of the Wizards. But anyway, yeah, I watch everything I can. And sometimes I drag my kids into it, even if they don't want to and they want to play the Xbox. But they appease me every once in a while, and I love it, man. Let's go Terps. Terps got maybe a 5 seed in the tournament. That'd be
yes,
nice.
That
Caps look like they're making a run here. The Skins are a mess, but we still love them. It's okay. And the Nats are just getting going. I hope the Nets win more now. It's amazing in sports, and in sports is the only thing you could do this in. I've loved Bryce Harper forever, and now I hate him, and I've hated Carl Hagelin forever, and now I love him. It's a bizarre way that sports intertwines with life.
Absolutely, and I agree with you on Buck. I worked with him for many years at Fox 5 and at Comcast Sportsnet, so he definitely deserves to go out on his own terms. You touched on a bunch of the teams. So Caps, tell me, what did winning the Stanley Cup mean to you as a DC and as a Caps fan last year? What did that mean?
What did winning the Stanley Cup mean to me?
Yeah.
For the very first time. Well, I cried when
we won.
I wasn't expecting that. My wife and our 3 teenage sons, we flew up for game 4, and I was in the building for the NFC Championship game against the Cowboys at RFK that first time. I've been in the building for lots of great events. I don't think I've ever been at a better sporting event and a better atmosphere than that night, game 4. I wish it would have been a clincher, but that's okay. They went up 3-1 in the series and then won in game 5. Winning the Stanley Cup for the first time, and you know, look, you and I are around the same age, Joe, and we're from D.C. We've seen the Skins win 3.
Yep.
We saw the Bullets win 1. We've seen our Terps win 1.
Yep.
The Nats have only been around for a cup of coffee. I love them, but I'm not, you know, it's not like etched in my heart and brain forever.
Right.
But the Caps were the last missing piece of the puzzle, and it was a magical run. They were great, and it literally changed my life. I swear to you, I still think of it. I'm a grown man. I'm a 50-year-old man, and I still think of it just about every day. I'm in indebted forever to all of those guys for putting our city on their back and taking us on a wonderful ride.
Absolutely. It was kind of like completing the Grand Slam for us as fans. And for me, you know, I grew up an Orioles fan before, after the Senators had left, I got to D.C. after that.
Right, me too.
So it kind of completed our Grand Slam, sort of.
It was amazing. It's funny. It's funny about the Orioles. People ask me that all the time. I'm a D.C. guy. I grew up an Orioles fan, but it was never like, you know, my dad would take us to a couple games in Memorial Stadium a year, but it was 45 minutes away. And, you know, they were Baltimore, not D.C. It wasn't the Caps or the Bullet or the Terps or the Skin. And when the Nats came in the mid-2000s, I remember thinking, I wonder if I'm going to like them now. I've always been an Orioles fan, but I was never passionate about the Orioles. And then we took our kids, they were really, really young, to a game at RFK. And I thought, if they're playing sports in D.C., then I'm rooting for them. And I've been a Nats fan from day one. But, you know, I'd be lying to say that I have as much passion for the Nats as I do for the Caps and the Bullets. I can't call them the Wizards. The Bullets and the Skins and the Terps, because that's been in our blood, you know.
Absolutely.
For 50 years.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to talk a little
but
about Tiger.
But it's their turn. But, Joe, it's their turn now.
It is.
They're the only ones who haven't won one in our city. So now it's
that is true.
Turn.
That is true. And it would be nice with Bryce on the Phillies to win. As Bryce said, he wants to bring a title back to D.C.
Great was that?
That was awesome. And you know that when that happens, that soundbite will be played many, many times. All right.
Yeah,
so
that was great.
I want to talk a little about Tiger. This is how big time Steve Sands is. You got a nickname. Tiger gave you your nickname of Sandsy. That's pretty big time when Tiger Woods has given you a nickname, which I think has stuck, right?
No, stop. Yeah, everybody calls me that now. It's ridiculous. He says that to everybody, though. He puts an IE or a Y. He was meant to be a hockey player.
Yes, exactly. I'd be Yashy.
He's a big IE. Yes. Exactly. You'd be Joey or Yashy or whatever you call it. Yeah, he's really into that. And of course, because he's the most famous athlete on the planet, now everywhere I go, that's all anybody ever says to me. So whatever. He laughs at it. He thinks it's funny.
Now, last year, first of all, he said and probably thought that he may not never play again, that he may never play at a level where he could win again. And then all of a sudden last year, he gets healthy, starts playing well. And then what happened at the Tour Championship? That was surreal.
Yeah, that was pretty special. Watching those fans come down the 18th on Sunday.
That was unbelievable.
And surrounding the entire hole in green was one of, if not the single wildest scenes I've ever seen in my 28 years of doing this for a living. It was amazing because of who he is, because of what that event meant to him, winning his 80th PGA Tour event, first time in 5 years. We went head-to-head against the NFL that day, Joe, and our number, ratings-wise, I'm not a huge ratings guy, you know, who knows? You know, 2 weeks ago at the Honda Classic, we had an incredible finish, but the rating wasn't that great because it was Keith Mitchell who won instead of Brooks Koepka or Ricky Fowler.
Right.
So ratings to me don't mean that much, but to go head-to-head against football and Tiger coming down the stretch and getting that win, our rating was through the roof. It just proves what I've always thought. There has never been anybody in the history of sports, man or woman, who has affected his or her sport more with the audience than Tiger Woods. It is remarkable the reach that guy has. He plays, and it is the biggest deal in the world, and that's what proved out to be that Sunday. It was a wild scene in Atlanta.
No.
Atlanta is not a great sports town.
Right.
It really is. I'm not making fun of Atlanta. It's just kind of a transient town, more of a college football town with the University of Georgia than they care about the Hawks and the Falcons and all that. But man, they came out on that Sunday. The crowds were incredible, and it was a lot of fun.
That
it was loud, man. It was sports loud, not golf loud.
The only thing I've seen like that is, you know, we've all seen the black and white film of Arnie, you know, fighting through the crowd. That's what it looked like, you know.
Yep,
but
exactly.
To see it live, that was unbelievable. And, you know, they say Tiger moves the needle. He doesn't move the needle. He is the needle. So
he really is. It's incredible.
All right, so we're going to talk a lot more about Tiger after a break, and I also want to get a couple stories from you about the late Dan Jenkins and also Johnny Miller, and we've got a lot more to talk about with Steve Sands of NBC and Golf Channel. That'll happen right after a quick break. This is MoCo's Most Famous, brought to you by Montgomery Community Media.
MCM, your community media center, is making Montgomery County a great place to live through programs like 21 This Week. Montgomery County's hardest-hitting political talk show keeps you up to date with the local political scene. Montgomery Community Media. Our middle name is Community.
Thank you.
Welcome back. We're talking to Steve Sands of NBC and Golf Channel on MoCo's Most Famous, brought to you by Montgomery Community Media. Steve, I really appreciate the time, by the way, in your busiest stretch of the golf year. So thank you so much for the time you're giving us today.
Of course, anytime. All you're doing is killing time as my son's at the orthodontist. So we're good, man.
I'm happy to do that. I'll send you a bill.
So hey, remember the old retainer days?
Yes, yes. I'm not that far away, not from me, but from my daughter. So I remember them well.
So I used to throw my retainer away when I left it on the tray at McDonald's, and my mom would be like, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "You know, I'm sorry, Mom. You know, I was throwing down some double cheeseburgers, and I forgot that the tray had the retainer on it, and we got to go back to Dr. Kogod and get another one."
Great dental stories from Steve Sands. We're also talking golf here. We were talking about Tiger and how there's been no one like him, not only in golf, but in sports. What is your favorite Tiger? Is there a favorite Tiger story? Let's put aside the Tour Championship. I know that's one of your greatest memories. Any funny Tiger story? I'm sure you have some good ones.
Oh, there's plenty of funny ones. None that I can tell.
I was going to say, ones that you can say on the podcast.
Yeah, not many with him. There are, he enjoys the four-letter words and off-color jokes.
And he gets fined. You know, he gets fined more than anybody. Is that true? Or as often as anyone?
There's no question he gets fined more than anybody. When he was playing regularly on tour, which he hasn't in a long time, but when he was playing, 18 to 22 events every year, he would get fined more than anybody because he was always cursing. Now, it's not as if he curses more than anybody else. It's the fact that every shot he hits is on television.
Exactly.
So, it's a very unfair process
it is.
On the PGA Tour that every single step he takes, that Ricky takes, that those kinds of guys take is on camera. Whereas, I don't know, take any random guy on the PGA Tour who's not on television.
Mm-hmm.
He could be cursing and throwing clubs just like anybody
Nobody
else.
Cares.
But because he wasn't on camera, you won't get fined.
All right.
So there's an inequity in that. But
sure.
The thing about being around Tiger that I remember most, that I will always remember most, is his star power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is unreal the reaction he gets compared to any other athlete I've ever been around, other than Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Jordan, I've never seen anything like it. If anybody in your audience has ever seen the documentary on the Dream Team, when they were mobbed at every single place they went and seen and craziness and all that stuff, that's Tiger. Everywhere he goes, the guy can't go out to dinner. Literally can't go out to dinner because he won't be able to get through his steak. He'll get mobbed everywhere he goes.
So, my first memory of Tiger is kind of what you're talking about. The first time I walked inside the ropes with him at his tournament, his former tournament at Congressional, you see it on TV, you know about it, you know people in golf, so you know about it. But until you experience the 10-deep crowd and walking and the pressure of walking in the ropes because you can't do anything wrong and you have to be in the right spot and you can't move, that was unbelievable. And you've done that a million times, but that to me was, I've never before or since experienced anything like that.
No, there's nothing like it. What's weird is, I've called a lot of his golf over the years, and then obviously I'm very fortunate. I'm the guy who goes down and interviews him after rounds and after all those wins, whenever he's won on NBC. I've been fortunate enough to be the guy the last 8 years to talk to him, and it is craziness. The people who are yelling and screaming in golf, it's interesting. I don't want to be too intricate with the audience, but in golf, we wear a headset on the ground, but not over both ears. When I'm in the booth or when I'm in the tower calling golf, we have headsets on both ears. But in golf, you have to have one ear open to be able to hear. So when you're interviewing Tiger and that crowd's around, think of a big college football game when all the people are on the field around the interviewer and the coach whenever that happens after the game. It's like that with Tiger. After every round, people are screaming his name while we're doing the interview. And it makes me laugh. And I look at him and I go, man, I don't know how you do this, man. Everywhere you go. And he's like, yeah, you get used to it. I don't think that you do get used to it. It's madness, man. It's wild how people react when they see him either for the first time or for the thousandth time. There are people who follow the tour to follow him, and they all just lose their mind whenever they get a glimpse of him. It's pretty interesting to see.
So Montgomery County hosted his tournament, a Congressional, Avenel, was it RTJ one of the years or a couple of the years. Are you sorry to see that tournament leave your hometown?
There's nothing that saddens me more in golf than that. It drives me crazy. I am, as you know, people say, where are you from? I say D.C. And I've lived in Florida for 22 years, and I still say D.C. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm from. That's where I'll always be from. That's the most, I care about D.C. more than any other place. I care about the sports teams and the Terps more than anything in the world outside my family, and golf included. I think D.C. was robbed of a tournament. It didn't work out, but that doesn't mean it can't go back. But now it won't go back because everybody wants to play a congressional. Congressional made a deal with the PGA of America to host a PGA championship and a Ryder Cup, you know, extended all the way out, all the way to, into the 2030.
Right.
I think the USGA should be ashamed of itself for not having the 2026
yep.
U.S. Open be played at congressional. If anybody's wondering why, it's the 250th anniversary of our country.
Right.
It's in D.C. I'm biased, like the Steve Buckhans thing. I'm biased, unabashedly biased, admittedly biased. But you can't convince me that the U.S. Open in 2026 should not be held at congressional outside of the nation's capital on our country's 250th anniversary. It's an outrage. So that's why congressional made the deal with the PGA of America
right.
to bring the P Championship and the Ryder Cup. But each and every week on the PGA Tour, we go to different cities. D.C. is a big league city with all four major sports and absolutely should have a yearly PGA Tour event with major sprinkled in every 8 to 10 years. I think it saddens me greatly as a sports fan and a D.C. native to not have a PGA Tour stop in Washington.
Agreed. Now, they changed the schedule a bunch. Now, it's going to take some doing to get a tournament back here. Do you think in the next 5-10 years that's even a pipe dream to get a regular PGA Tour stop back here?
I think that ship has probably sailed.
Yep.
Think that, you know, you never know if a sponsor steps up, then it would happen tomorrow. But I think that, you know, the days of us hosting a PGA Tour event regularly,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like we've had our chance. It didn't work out a couple of different times.
Right.
But I really think D.C. being as big a market as it is, being the nation's capital, being as good a sports town as it can be, it's a big golf town too. There's a lot of golf to be had in the whole area, and it just drives me nuts that there's not a PGA Tour stop there. But there's also not a PGA Tour stop regularly in Philadelphia.
True.
Or Seattle. Or Chicago doesn't have one every year. They have one every other year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of weird like that. Boston doesn't have one anymore. I mean, it sucks. But I just wish D.C. had one. I love seeing D.C. succeed and do well sports-wise. And having a PGA Tour stop there regularly would kind of round things out mm-hmm. there.
Touched on it earlier in the podcast. I said that, you know, you have a dream job of every golf fan that watches you. Every golf fan wants to be you, wants to be wearing that headset, wants to have that microphone to be able to ask those questions right after somebody's round. Do you see it as a dream job, and do you realize how many people wish they were you?
Well, you try not to think about that kind of stuff, but I'd be the first one to tell you I've been incredibly fortunate, very lucky in my whole career, and I love my job. What's not to love? You're around the best golfers in the world, doing it at the highest level, and watching greatness every single day when you're working. People I work with are the best in the world at what they do, and the people we call golf every week, they're the best at what they do, or talk to the guys or the women, they're the best at what they do. It's a dream job, there's no question about it, and I am reminded, one of the great things about TV, Joe, that makes me laugh, unless you have a ridiculously big ego, everybody has an ego, but unless you have a ridiculously large ego, you've got to at least laugh, take your craft seriously, but never take yourself seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of the craziest things about television, and my kids found this out again for the umpteenth time yesterday at Bay Hill. People welcome you into your home. Who do you invite into your home? You invite family and friends.
Right.
That's it. Family and friends come in your home. So television is an incredibly warm medium. We're in your home every day, and people think they know you because they see you all the time. So they're always yelling your name or saying stuff to you, and people are always so nice. It's a very nice thing. It's not like anybody ever yells, "You suck." I would love that. I would love it if someone would just say, "You're so mediocre." It's never like that. They just,
careful what you wish
like
for.
Excited. Exactly. They're like excited to see you, and they say, "Oh, you're the best," or whatever. Blah, blah. So anyway, I'm reminded every day at work, somebody always yells at me, "You have the greatest job in the world. Oh, oh, God, I wish I could do that, but that kind of stuff. So if I didn't realize it, Joe, I'd be the dumbest man on the planet. So yes, I do realize it. I know how lucky I am. Now, having said that, I hope it continues for a long, long time. And I know that it's very fleeting and could go away. But hopefully you're doing a job good enough for the audience and your bosses and the people who you're interviewing and calling golf for that they keep you around for a long time. It's a dream job. It's fantastic.
Now, on the flip side of the dream job stuff is that it's hard work. It's long hours. It's long days. You're away from your family a lot of weekends. So there is a glamour to it, but then there's also the other side.
Yeah. I mean, look, we were joking yesterday. If there was anything in the whole world it's like the lottery. You know, what would you do? The first thing you do if you hit the lottery, if you could do anything in the whole world, what would you do? And I said, there was no question. I would have private aviation for the two greatest words in the English language. if anybody's ever bragged, I'm in the air 200,000 miles a year, probably on the road between 180 and 200 days a year. And it's great. I have zero complaints. But if you've ever lugged your bag or bags from the baggage claim area onto a rental car bus, off a rental car bus, and then put them in the car, and then had Hertz tell you that the car won't be ready for an hour after you've just flown hours across the country, after a while, you're like, all right, I've had enough of this. If I had private aviation, my life would change immensely. But I have zero complaints. Traveling's part of the job. Going to see the world and the country on the company's dime is one of the great things about our job. If they could eliminate the entire rental car process to and from filling up that tank when you're racing to catch the last flight out, the whole deal, that would be great. But you will never hear me complain. People ask me this all the time, Joe, and I'm glad you asked. Sure, some of it is an inconvenience, and yes, I miss a lot when I'm away of games and school events and things with my wife, the whole thing. But I'm also home a lot more than most people, and I also see a lot more than most people, and I'm the luckiest guy in the world to do what I do. So I'm not about to complain to you about the way we have to travel. But if you had to say one thing ever, boy, it'd be nice to have a plane here.
All right, just a few remaining minutes with Steve Sands of NBC and Golf Channel. You talked about some of the talented people you work with. I'd like to talk about one who retired a few weeks ago, Johnny Miller, my favorite golf announcer besides you, of course, of all time, because he was so honest. He would talk about choking. Nobody talked about choking. He was so great. What are your memories of Johnny Miller as an announcer?
When I got hired by NBC in 2011, I walked into the trailer in the TV compound, adjacent to the 18th green at the time at the Tour Championship. And Johnny Miller was sitting on the couch. And it was a very intimidating moment for someone like me. And he looked at me, stood up, put his hand on my shoulder, and said, "Welcome to the team, Steve. You're going to make us better."
Wow.
I will never forget as long as I live. Johnny is one of the nicest, warmest people I've ever met. He could be ruthlessly critical on television, but it came from a good place.
Mm-hmm.
It never came from a negative place.
Right.
It came from a good place. And there's a difference. He is not someone who's just trying to slash someone. All he's trying to point out to you as the audience is, that was a lousy shot, or that was a terrible decision, or he's choking, or whatever he would say. He was just calling it like he saw it. And he would say that about himself as well. He would tell you, as great a player as he was, he would tell you, "I was the best player in the world for a couple of years." He would also tell you that he was so bad and couldn't make a putt and had the yip that he was embarrassing himself. So when he became a broadcaster, he thought, why don't I just say what I'm thinking? Because that's what people are thinking. And by the way, the beauty of Johnny was that he knew and understood that players are the first ones to tell, "That was a lousy shot," or "I did choke." They just don't like hearing it. And that's what's fascinating about covering professional athletes. They know when they play poorly, yet they don't want to hear someone else say it.
Sure.
And it's fascinating. So if you have the credentials and the credibility of Johnny Miller, you can say it and mean it and get away with it and do it with a little bit of a soft touch, because Johnny is extremely religious. Everybody knows about his Mormon faith. He's madly in love with his wife they've got to be married for more than 40 years now. His kids, his grandkids, everything he does is about his family. He just calls it like he sees it on a golf course. And that's what made him refreshing when he first came onto the scene. And that's what made him be missed now that he's gone. And he was wonderful to work with. Now, having said that, Joe, he can be way out there. He's on Planet Miller once in a while. You know, it's like, whoa, where did that come from? And he said some dumb stuff. But always, always it came from a good place. And I will always count Johnny Miller as a friend, and I'm honored to say that.
I learned a lot of golf watching and listening to Johnny, and I will definitely, a lot of golf fans will miss him. Another person we'll miss is Dan Jenkins, the great sports writer, arguably, if not inarguably, the greatest golf writer of all time. What are your memories of the great Dan Jenkins?
Dan Jenkins was all, someone asked me yesterday, was Dan nice to you? Because Dan could be really tough.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Dan was always nice to me because I'm a D.C. guy, and I always loved Sally. Sally Jenkins, his daughter, is a sports columnist in the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
So that connection was always something that Dan appreciated whenever I was around him. Dan also was very old school. He would watch everything. So anytime he liked or disliked something that I said or did on TV, he would let you know. And I love that about him. He was one of a kind. He was a great writer. Not good. He was a great sports writer. And he will be sorely missed in the sports world, especially in the golf world.
Couldn't have said it better. You ready for the lightning round, Steve?
Sure. Love it.
All right. Phil Mickelson. I think he turns 49 on Father's Day, U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. As everyone knows, he needs only the U.S. Open to complete the career Grand Slam, and everybody knows about the history of second places and heartbreaking finishes. Can he do it? He won at Pebble Beach earlier this year. Obviously, it's a completely different course for the U.S. Open. Can he do it? Will he do it? Or is it too late?
He will not win the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different golf course than how it plays in February. Like you said, the conditions are completely different. I do think, however, he has a chance to win next year at Wingfoot, of all places, where he lost that crazy lead and Jeff Ogilvy ended up winning when he turns 50. But I don't love his chances at Pebble. I do think at Wingfoot, it might happen. You never know.
Wow.
You never know, Phil. I think it's too late for him to win a U.S. Open. But I don't see him doing it at Pebble.
Okay.
But at Wingfoot, it could happen. You never know.
Your dream foursome. You're playing golf. Who are your three partners? I guess they can be anyone in history. You know what? Let's just do people who are living that can play golf. Your dream foursome.
Let's see. Art Monk, my dad, and Halle Berry.
That's the best dream foursome I've ever heard in my life. Where would you play this round of golf?
St. Andrews.
St. Andrews, the old course. Very nice. I can't believe you haven't been.
Old course.
Somebody must have asked you this question before, right?
Which one?
The dream foursome.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, all right, I was just wondering. Okay, so a couple more
Absolutely.
Lightning.
So it's the oldest question in golf. I love it.
Absolutely. All right, well, I'm not
Art
coming
Monk
up.
Is my favorite, Art Monk's my favorite athlete of all time. I wore number 81 in high school because of him. I would love to play one last round of golf with my dad before it gets too late.
Mm-hmm.
And Halle Berry is self-explanatory.
And, okay, how good of a golfer are you?
I'm terrible.
How is a golf guy, the Golf Channel and NBC, how are you a terrible golfer?
Because I hate the game. It's a miserable, ornery game. I'm terrible. I hate it.
All right, we're going to end on that
it's
note.
It's a love-hate relationship with the sport.
It's a love-hate. Steve, I cannot thank you enough for all the time you took out for us today. Really, really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Joe. Honored to be on your show, and love you, man. I've known you for the better part of like 2.5 decades, so I'm glad you're doing well, and anytime you ever want to chat, I'm always here.
You are the best. We will see you on TV next week at the Players, and then for the rest of the season, I want to thank engineer Carolyn Raskauskas, intern Ashley Proffitt, everyone else here at MyMC Media. You're listening to MoCo's Most Famous. Until next time.